Hello, and welcome to another episode of Waves of Change, a Great Lakes Now digital series focused on highlighting the diverse voices and perspectives shaping the environmental justice movement throughout the Great Lakes region. I'm Anna Seisling, and I'm so grateful to you for tuning in.
This program is brought to you by the Fred A. and Barbara M. Erb Family Foundation, the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, Richard C. Devereaux Foundation for Energy and Environmental Programs at Detroit PBS, Polk Family Fund, DTE Foundation, and contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Joining me today is Tom Grotewall, resident of Wakefield Township in Michigan's Upper Peninsula and founder of the Protect the Porkies campaign. Tom, I'm really, really excited to talk with you today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on today to talk about this important cause.
Absolutely. So this is a series where I am lucky enough to get to talk with different folks involved in environmental justice, organizing, facilitating, visioning, all throughout the Great Lakes region. And I like to start these conversations by asking the people I talk to, in this moment, what does environmental justice mean to you?
For me, environmental justice has always been regarding providing a voice and providing a representation for those who do not have a voice in our system, specifically all of the amazing non-human and more than human life forms with whom we share this planet. Like you and I, we're two humans having this conversation that people are listening to. Later on, they might watch some TV about other humans having human problems and human solutions. But you know, really, we need to remember that we are a fraction of 1% of the tree of life. And that so often gets left out of all of these big conversations.
Mm. You are founder of Protect the Porkies campaign. I know that some folks, especially those in Michigan's Upper Peninsula and Northern Lower Peninsula, are maybe familiar with this campaign because it's been around for, I think, about a year ago, maybe is when it came on my radar anyway. But tell us a little bit about Protect the Porkies.
Yeah, so the Protect the Porkies campaign is what we call it, started in June of last year. That's when we launched a petition at change.org/protecttheporkies, asking people to sign on to oppose the development of the proposed Copperwood Mine, which is a Canadian company's plan to mine next to and potentially underneath Porcupine Mountain State Park, ship the copper to Canada, and leave behind a tremendous pile of mine waste, over 30 million tons of mine waste containing mercury, arsenic, a lot of toxins, right next both to the North Country Trail and to Lake Superior. In fact, it would be the closest of these waste facilities on record to Lake Superior. So this is a very sparsely populated area. If a project like this were happening right next door to Traverse City or, you know, Lansing, you'd have millions of people up in arms. But because there's actually no power grid out here, there's no permanent human development or residence near where the mine site is being proposed, the community is really the flora and the fauna and all of those other life forms that we talked about earlier who don't have a voice in this process. So we thought, let's just launch this petition. We started a website. We started getting in contact with people in the community here and also people outside of the immediate community, because the Porcupine Mountains and Lake Superior and the North Country Trail, these are entities of such tremendous collective value that the fight to protect them necessarily transcends county lines and state lines. So we really just wanted to spread the word all over the state and even all over the country. I think it's important to stress that we're not an anti-mining campaign. We would be opposing any sort of large industrial project out here. The Porcupine Mountain State Park is the largest designated wilderness area in mainland Michigan. It is over 30,000 acres of mixed coniferous deciduous old growth forest. That's the largest in the Midwest. So in order to maintain the vibrancy of that ecosystem, you don't want any sort of large human development there. And in order to start this mine or any business out here, they would have to roll out the power grid, sell infrastructure, improve all of the roads. And once you do that, you're opening the floodgates, not just for a mine, but for large scale human development for decades to come, which would forever change the nature of this area. So we're delivering a message, and then we're giving folks pretty easy ways that they can get involved and speak up on behalf of this area.
What is the overall goal of this campaign?
Making sure the Copperwood mine doesn't move forward. That is one of our goals. We also seek just to educate people about the larger conversations and develop a network which can respond robustly to other causes. So right now we've got, you know, thousands of people fired up about this particular campaign, which is fantastic. But then we send out action alerts related to other issues throughout the Upper Peninsula and the Upper Midwest. You know, we are a small campaign run by volunteers going up currently against a multi-million dollar multinational company. Whether or not we are successful with that particular battle has no bearing on the degree to which we got people educated and got people connected and were able to further other campaigns across the Upper Midwest.
Talk a little bit about where things stand with the mining proposal right now for Copperwood. Just for people who maybe, you know, haven't been following the Protect the Porcupines campaign and don't know, you know, sort of the backstory and the twists and the turns of this whole thing.
Yeah. So just to zoom out first, there's this history of extraction here. And the Upper Peninsula historically has been used as a resource colony. So what that means is that if you go back to the fur trade, back through the early days of logging and iron ore mining and copper mining, it was always companies that were not from the Upper Peninsula, in this case, not even from the United States, who were shipping both the natural and the financial wealth hundreds of miles away, usually to places like Boston and Pittsburgh. Now a lot of that wealth would be going to Toronto. And even though it created maybe some short-term jobs, it resulted in long-term economic decline, as well as a lot of environmental devastation. So what we're seeing today is really just a perpetuation of that same cycle. Folks should ask themselves, why is it that the areas on the planet that are highest in natural wealth and natural resources are so often the poorest in terms of economic wealth? And that's because of what is called the resource curse. So we're being asked to just not only to tolerate a foreign company perpetuating the resource curse here, but actually to subsidize it with our taxpayer dollars. As far as what's been happening with the Copperwood mine, it was first proposed 15 years ago by a different Canadian company, which then didn't manage to raise the funds. It was sort of absorbed into another company called Highland Copper, who currently owns the project. And nothing much was happening until last year. They actually rerouted several streams. And the reason they did that is because they needed to make room for this waste facility. They're saying it's a copper mine, but actually copper is about 1.45% of what would come out of the ground. So almost 99% would be waste, and they'd have to store that on site in this massive facility so close. It would be the closest in history to Lake Superior, and it would be so big. We're talking 244 football fields in area, higher than the Statue of Liberty. It would be visible from the Lake of the Clouds Overlook, from Copper Peak, of course, from the North Country Trail. So that's why they rerouted these streams last year. That's why they clear-cut something like 80 acres of forest and destroyed wetlands. They're permitted to destroy 61 acres of wetlands, which is one of the highest totals in Michigan permitting history. And this is all in the name of a project that they don't actually have the funding to start. So really things began accelerating a year ago, but then in January of 2024, we learned that the state of Michigan was considering this $50 million grant that passed through the Michigan Strategic Fund. It passed through the Michigan House in May. And then in June, at the very last second, it was not outright rejected, but it was swept under the rug by the Michigan Senate. And that was in response to our campaign in collaboration with other groups, mobilizing thousands of people to reach out to senators en masse, call them, write to them nonstop for weeks. And they saw the truth of our arguments, and they came up with some good business arguments of their own, and they realized, you know, it really doesn't make sense to be subsidizing such a controversial project with taxpayer revenue. But then what happened at the end of September is the Gogebic County Board of Commissioners, Gogebic County is the county in westernmost Upper Peninsula where the mine would be based, they sent a letter to the Senate asking for the grant to be reintroduced. So there's a handful of business people and political leaders up here who think that this would be very good for the economy, because they aren't necessarily well versed in the long term impacts of these kinds of operations or the environmental impacts. And in response, we now know that the Senate is discussing this very same grant again, and they are expected to vote on it probably in December. So again, we find ourselves mobilizing folks. We invite everybody listening to go to protecttheporkies.com and click Take Action, and you'll find some very easy ways you can help us in this battle. And we think there's a good chance we can see the Senate overturn this grant as long as we have as much participation as possible.
Got it. Okay. And I should also note for folks listening that we are recording this on November 12th of 2024. So I want to ask you to go back and talk a little bit about just sort of what your network and how you've been able to get some of your information. Is all of this information publicly available? Where have you been finding all of this out?
Yeah, these are all documents that the company itself has produced, but they just don't expect people outside of the mining industry to actually look at those documents. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the Copperwood mine has been proposed for 15 years. So people have been tracking Copperwood for well over a decade. And when I first came on the scene, I had the good fortune of linking up with others who have been in this fight for longer. And they were able to educate me on a lot of the jargon of the mining industry, on all the things that we already know about Copperwood. They provided me with the documents. So, the first part of the battle was just reminding people that this is actually happening. Because after 15 years, it's easy to think, okay, this is a dormant project. It doesn't need to be taken seriously. But once you're rerouting streams, once you're destroying wetlands, that's with or without a mine, that's already very real carnage that is taking place. Again, all for the sake of a project with less than 10% of its funding. I think that's something that we really need to take a good look at, is why can a company wreak permanent havoc on an ecosystem when they don't even have the wherewithal to start the project?
I want to ask you a little bit, as you've been involved in Protect the Porkies campaign and watching it grow and gain momentum, what have been the biggest lessons that you've learned in this process?
I guess one lesson is that we actually can affect change in the system. When we were able to see this proposed grant to the mine be denied by the Senate back in June, even though they passed every other grant package that was on the table, that was a big lesson for me. I'm not historically a person that has a lot of faith in the system. But when I saw that thousands of people writing to senators and calling senators actually had an impact on their decision, that was a very powerful moment. I guess trying to run a campaign like this, I've also learned that it's important to build the network as wide as possible and include as many people and as many perspectives as possible. So our philosophy has just been to say yes to everybody's idea. You know, they suggest, you should try this, you should reach out to these people. It's like the mycelia in the ground. It's all about connections. Once you get a certain density of connections, that's when the fruiting body appears. So even if something, if we don't know how it's going to turn out, we pursue that path. There's a teaching in Hinduism called karma yoga, which is all about working without worrying about the fruits of your labor. You know, if we worry about, are we actually going to be able to make sure the mind doesn't move forward, then we get too obsessed with the future and we get too obsessed with this objective, which may or may not happen, and we don't actually enjoy the process. And then if our goal doesn't happen or doesn't happen in the way we expected, we get frustrated and maybe we just give up completely. But if we enjoy the process and we enjoy connecting with other people and we enjoy learning more about nature and more about geology and everything, then it's a win no matter what happens. And one other thing that I've found very helpful is the appreciation for gratitude and respect that I see in the indigenous communities. For example, after the grant was denied by the Michigan Senate back in June, the very same grant which is now being proposed again, I reached out to a man from the Menominee tribe named Aniquette, and I gave him the good news. And I said, Aniquette, we managed to get the Senate to not pass the grant. Now we're going to reach out to the company's investors and tell them why this is bad for the company. You know, that was my first reaction, is let's sort of twist the knife and let the investors know. And Aniquette said, wow, that's such great news. We should tell the senators thank you. And, you know, that had never occurred to me. Like, I thought you only reach out to politicians when you're angry. You don't reach out to tell them thank you. And so then immediately following that, we organized a campaign and asked people to write to the senators and tell them thank you for this wisdom that they had shown and this good deed that they had done. And now I try to see gratitude in other actions as well.
So, okay, when you and I talked, Tom, before recording our formal interview today, you told me that you didn't grow up here. You studied anthropology and creative writing. You grew up in Kansas City. When you were younger, did you ever think that this is what you'd be doing right now in the final months of 2024?
I certainly wouldn't have imagined so specifically what I'd be doing, but protecting wild places and ecosystems has always been near and dear to my heart. You know, when I was 8 years old, I had the good fortune of taking a trip to Costa Rica and seeing the rainforest there. And after that, I was, you know, the kind of kid who wanted to save the rainforest. And that just sort of stuck with me for the rest of my life. I've always had a profound love of wild places. And so growing up in Kansas City, I was also fortunate, even though, you know, it's a big concrete town, the same as most cities are, and it's surrounded by a lot of agriculture. The place where I grew up was a peaceful home in the suburbs, and my mom had this big sprawling garden where the birds came, and there was always lots of wildlife. So that also probably shaped me. But when I came into adulthood, my partner and I decided we wanted to find a place to live, to lay down roots where we could really have a sense of wildness. You know, I think the wildness that we see around us influences the wildness that we have inside us. So we wanted to have a home somewhere where you can actually see the night sky. I mean, how scarce is that to get a good view of the stars? To be next to clean, fresh water, you know, natural water that you can drink from without fear of being poisoned. To be next to old growth forest, which has never been logged. We're talking today to some extent about a copper mine, and they say copper is a scarce resource, but all these things that I'm talking about are even scarcer and even more valuable than copper. And so we moved to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan a few years ago, even though we didn't know a single soul in the state of Michigan, but we were seeking what the rest of the Midwest has lost: wildness.
I want to ask you, as we kind of start to close things out here, Tom, what advice do you have for other folks who might not necessarily have a background in climate or science or even organizing for that matter, but want to try to get involved in affecting change where they live?
Yeah, you don't need a background. You will get the background in the process of trying to affect that change. You know, you don't get the resume and then do something useful or important. You do the thing that inspires you, and that becomes your resume. So whatever it is that you would like to change, or whatever issue you would like to educate the world on, just start doing it and start small. And one big thing that I would encourage everybody to do, whether you are 100 years old or 1 year old, is just to go out into nature as often as possible, because that, at least for me, reminds me of what we're fighting for to begin with.
All right. Well, Tom Grotewohl, you've been just such a joy to talk with and such a wealth of information. I want to end, though, on this sort of relational community aspect that you've alluded to in terms of doing this work in relationship and in community and alongside others. So are there any other organizations or folks that you'd like to share out and recommend, you know, maybe people can go and check out if they want to learn more about other environmental issues, impacts of mining, and the environmental justice movement more broadly in Michigan and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many amazing organizations out there. We work very closely with the Upper Peninsula Environmental Coalition and also Citizens for a Safe and Clean Lake Superior. Citizens for Superior, they managed to defeat a proposed rocket launch site right on the shore of Lake Superior outside of Marquette. So they've actually got some important victories under their belts. From downstate Michigan, there's a group called the Economic Development Responsibility Alliance of Michigan, EDRA, and they're looking at a lot of parallel issues in which we're seeing these massive corporate welfare handouts from the state of Michigan being given to multinational companies for projects that destroy the environment and are opposed by communities, but they serve a larger agenda. And that's exactly what we're seeing with our mine. So check out EDRA as well. If people want to learn more about some of the deeper sort of zoomed out issues, I would highly recommend looking into the deep green resistance movements. There's a great Michigan filmmaker named Jeff Gibbs, who has a film called Planet of the Humans. And there's a Michigan author named Ozzie Zenner, who has a book called Green Illusions. Both of those works are crucial to understanding the current environmental situation and the current energy agenda as it's been proposed.
All right. I appreciate it. And I know you said protecttheporkies.com is the place. That call to action one more time.
Every day for the rest of November and through December, encourage your friends and family to reach out to the Michigan Senate Appropriations Committee, urging them to reject the grant. You'll find all that info at protecttheporkies.com as well as on our social media. And it's really empowering to participate in something like this. You know, Protect the Porkies is not an organization. Too often we know that there's an organization to address a cause, and so we assume that they're going to take care of it. In our case, we're a volunteer-run group, and we really depend on a lot of dedicated and passionate people from around Michigan and beyond to get some skin in the game and dedicate some time to making this happen. So thank you, everybody.
Waves of Change is a production of Great Lakes Now and Detroit PBS. This digital series is produced and edited by me, Anna Seisling, with additional support from Jordan Wingrove. Great Lakes Now's executive producer is Rob Green, and Detroit PBS Vice President of Content is Ed Moore.
This program is brought to you by the Fred A. and Barbara M. Erb Family Foundation, the Charles Stewart Mott Foundation, Richard C. Devereaux Foundation for Energy and Environmental Programs at Detroit PBS, Polk Family Fund, DTE Foundation, and contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.